Welcome back, everybody, to the Smoking Snake podcast. This is, of course, the only English language podcast all about Brazilian football. You've got your hosts, myself, Peter, and Henrik, but we also have a very special guest. The guest in question today is Steven Brandt. Steven is what you call an OG on football Twitter since 2008, which is insane. He's a podcaster. He's an author. He's written Boca Juniors, A History of an Appreciation of Buenos Aires' Most Successful Football Team. And even more recently, Flamengo winning all the cups. And I know he's got a few more books in the pipeline, at least. In addition to that, he also writes at the South American Football Chronicles on Substack. And of course, you may have even heard me on it, the Subs Bench podcast. I think it was called Yellow Card at the time with Duffy Elderson. Yeah. Welcome, Steven, and thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, I got to realize that when I still have my, when you joined Twitter on there, that there's a lot of people I'm talking to nowadays that were like in grade school at that time. Like, I don't know if you've talked to them, and I really wish you, they would cross over and do something. Is Gabriel Aguero with the Boca English pod. He's a brilliant guy. He's also 24 and just got out of med school. Just like, what the hell? I'm like, there are people in here that are watching this stuff that is young. Yeah, I've been doing this so long that when I started writing, I had to write what I wanted to see. And now there's so many people out there. I mean, I'm talking to two Santos guys in America, and that's just, both of you've got a lot better hair than I do, and probably better hair than you guys I had at your age.
Well, anyways, thanks so much for joining us. Like I said, Henrik, how are you doing, man? How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing pretty well. I mean, it's a cold night in winter, but thankfully we have Steven with us and he can talk to us about South American teams like Flamengo and Boca, as we're going to be talking soon.
Yeah, absolutely. So, but let's just kind of jump into you as a person. Steven, I kind of told you you're an OG. You were one of my first follows, and actually I owe a big thanks to you because you had me on your podcast way back in the day. Using the pseudonym Pedro, actually. That was so much fun. I was so nervous and it really got me thinking. And I know we've messaged a lot and you were, you know, one of the guys that was saying, hey, you got to do this Brazilian podcast. So thanks for that. But my question to you, first question, you're from the US, born and raised, like us. You don't really have a familial connection, I don't think, to Brazil or Argentina, but you have a deep interest in South American football. So as a fellow Rust Belt American, growing up, or I guess living in Buffalo, such a hockey hotbed, football, you've got the Bills, American football. How did you find your love for the sport?
Oh, and I have the scar tissue about the Bills from the 90s also. Oh, I'm old. Oh, Lord. Well, the there's two forms of it. One of them is when I was in my freshman year in college was World Cup 98. Now, I'm probably talking to two people that were born in 98 on that one, but we got to sit around in Kansas because I went out for a not quite orientation, kind of like summer camp from when I was living in Minnesota. And we just sat down and watched it. And I mean, I got to see some of the fun there. Interesting one. You probably, Peter, have not been listening to the pod long enough to know the Napoli story.
I don't think so.
Okay, you're gonna have, you guys are, you and Eric are gonna have a lot of fun with this one because there's a lot, there's a long story to this one. I went to high school in Minnesota because my dad, when I was an eighth grader, got transferred from Rochester, New York to Minnesota. And in my infinite wisdom, and boy, I should have thought this one out thoroughly, I stopped taking Spanish early. So I decided to take Latin because, you know, that's always going to be around. Well, my sophomore year in high school, we went to Italy for a month.
Wow.
This is like 95, 96, summer of that. And we got to tour, we did all the major ones, Rome. I walked up, I was at the Vatican. I'm not the most religious person anymore, but still everybody has to go and see the Vatican because it's immaculate. And the other thing is we went to Naples our last week there. And we had a really kind of screwy priest with us that wanted to do an expedition up Mount Vesuvius. No. Even when I was young, I was not the most adventurous person. I mean, I walk 3 or 4 miles a day now, but I'm 44. I have to. So we decided to go and just sit. Something. So one of the girls with us saw Napoli Stadium, and she's like, "Oh, I can get us tickets. Don't worry about it. You won't have to pay for anything." I'm not really saying too much why she could get the tickets out, but anyway, we go in, we in this, and what I'm seeing are people that are bringing in packs of 64 beer, holding one on. 64 packs of beer, one in each hand, and walking up behind us. Now, I'm about 16 at this. This is the dumbest thing I've ever seen. Well, it was some, like, lower division team, and the home team is just getting trashed, and the stadium starts coming apart. They're throwing things onto the pitch. I'm, like, in the back, directly on one of the corners. Things are coming off the they're taking apart the stadium over me. I'm like right in general admission. Well, the riot cops come up and come at us. Now I have my contacts in at the time, and they're just spraying, they're tear gassing everybody as they're walking closer. And I'm looking at this, I'm like, this is the dumbest thing I've ever seen. And this is also the coolest thing. They get closer and closer, and they crank one of the, and they have these like tubs about as big as those helium things you see at birthday parties.
Okay.
Real big. They're carrying these things. They crank it up and then burn it on me, right on me. And here's the funny thing, Peter. I had the same haircut you had. You have right now, exact same one. In fact, my first picture I had of it, I'm like, I'm not getting in and out of the country with this. 96, a lot of things were different. So I hit the ground. I don't speak a lick of Italian. So I get back up. I get myself home. I get myself back to our hostel. I can't see a damn thing. I mean, I take these off. I can't judge anything. I get home. I relax. I get my glasses on when I get home. 6 o'clock rolls around, and Italy has state-run news. Who leads off the sports report of the night? My fat ass falling down the stairs.
No way.
Yes. Now, unreal. Surprisingly, this won't be the last time in the 90s I'll be shown topless on television. That happens in Kansas towards the end, but that's an even better story I'll tell someone else. So I love this. We get back home to Minnesota. My mom is just hesitant because at that time we didn't have cell phones, emails, or anything. We didn't even have long distance cards. It was, I didn't talk to my parents in a month. I walk out, I look at my mom and dad, I'm going, guess what? I was tear gassed and I was on Italian national news. Mother freaks out completely. So from that's where the love of it started. I always wanted to be in media in some aspect or another. My original plan was college basketball. Fortunately, everybody who doesn't have athletic ability goes into that at my age. So I didn't really stand out. So in 2005, when the British underwear model wasn't here, it was easier to write and do things on this. Now everybody and their mother has a pod. Actually, some mothers have pods.
That's a cool story that you talked about, because as an American, you explained how you went to Italy when you were a teenager. And I think maybe that's when the love for football began. But looking at your life ever since, what inspired you to become a writer and a content maker in the world of football? Because you could have chased basically anything. It's been probably 20 to 30 years since then. And you could have chased any other career. Why become a writer and content maker in football?
It's different. This generation is, your generation and my generation come at it very differently. There wasn't the access at that point. I mean, my first articles are about Manchester United, and I hate them with a passion. I've always written in some aspect or another. I have notebooks at my sister's house of stuff I was writing when I was. It was going to happen. I mean, I used to live and die by the preview magazines for all the major sports. I diagrammed out drafts and all of that. Soccer, football was the easiest thing for me, because originally, as I said in the pre-show, a lot of my stuff comes before Beckham comes up. So it was a very small media. And a lot of the people I came in with are out completely. So I figured I will write enough. I will get famous for this. And then I don't have to go get a crap job somewhere down the line. That one backfired on me. Thank you, David, on that one. So I just started writing on the history. My original goal was to write a history article on all the teams in the UK in all the pyramid. There's all like, I think there's 142 in England, and there's like that much in Scotland. It just expanded from there as I've worked in the sport, gotten to know people, read some more.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, we're definitely thankful that you kept writing and you kept tweeting, and allows so many great relationships to be made, including, you know, the one that we're fostering here. Yeah. So let's just kind of move on. I know you're more of the history guy, like you said. You're pre-Beckham coming to the U.S., a lot of your content. We're Santos guys. We talked Santos on your podcast prior, and you write a lot of stuff about Santos back in the day, stuff that, I mean, there's no English content. So yeah. Before we get to all that, I just want to know how you are looking at Santos, of course, historically and tragically relegated for the first time ever. How are you going to look back at this? I mean, this is a pretty traumatic event. I'm sure you've written about seismic things like this happening in the past, maybe to different clubs. But for a club like Santos, how are you looking at this relegation?
That pissed me off. That legitimately pissed me off, because I don't have any basis to stand that on. I mean, for most of it, I have been a Liverpool and Celtic fan. Neither of those teams have been down in my lifetime. And I was born in 79. I mean, you would just inherently think about that. Every club has its downtimes. It just happens. I mean, unless if you are corrupt like the blue side of Glasgow is, for a big team like Santos to go down, something bad behind the scenes has to go. Because in the greater aspect of the sport, that is one of the clubs. I mean, you two could do your the all-time 11s for Santos and probably have enough players off that they would be different. I could probably do the same thing for you with Santos too. I hope this doesn't end up like it does over in England with like when Nottingham Forest went down, when Leeds went down. I mean, Derby went down. For God's sakes, Notts County to North End is the first invincible team over England. They haven't been up in 30 years. You can't have that happen to a big team. And Santos is not that small, non-existent team that needs to go down like Vasco or needs to or has gone through the relegation like Corinthians. They need to sort their shit out. But you guys have talent. It's not like you can't sell off a 17-year-old to like Saudi Arabia and go back through. The great thing with Brazil is you can develop. That's what the United States doesn't do. You can go, Santos can go get the next five goalkeepers. Easy. And I mean, you're not going to get $100 million for them, but you could put that back into the team. And this is one of those come to Jesus moments. Either you do it right and come back up. And this has to be with the fans, because that's what Brazil and South America do it the right way. They have members. They listen to their fans somewhat. This is what the fans have to get behind. And either they have to completely boycott, and I don't know if they can pull that one off, or they have to just show up all the time and make sure they're coming back.
Yeah, we're on the same page as you, because it's really unbelievable how the club has fallen so much. We can maybe talk about some of the early histories, but maybe that's something that you could help us explain much more. So can you tell us about the history of the team and your first memories as Santos as a club, maybe about a specific player that you read or watched and that caught your attention back then?
Well, I mean, let me be honest with you. You guys are what, in your 30s?
I'm 24.
Yeah, I'm 29.
Oh, dear God, you guys are both old enough to be my kids. Oh, that makes it feel even worse. Now, do you guys remember watching the sport where there was only one game on per month?
I mean, no. I mean, I've in my watching lifetime, I've always just used streaming services. I can, or streaming like online, and you can find however many games you want, you know?
Okay, so let me give you guys a little bit of a misnomer. Up until David Beckham came over, there was one game a month, or it was the Champions League of a month. That's why you see so many Arsenal, Liverpool, and Man United fans. That's why I focus on South America, because they could have done it. So for my generation, watching the game was either on those kind of like magazine type of shows, or like you hear Soccer Made in Germany from PBS. So living in New York, really the only real thing I could do to watch the sport at your age was through documentaries. One of them was Once in a Lifetime, the New York Cosmos one. The book's better than that one too. And I've actually talked to a couple of the guys behind the scenes. There's a little bit more about Giorgio Canalia than there is there. Of course, it's Pele, Zito, Dida, Lula, and all of that. But you know, why I focus a lot on Santos is, yeah, I know I'm going to get the cheap mention from you guys, either on the podcast or one of yours, And then, I mean, I'll be honest. That's why some of the stuff I've done, like I will pick Boliviar for the Boliviar news guy. I will just randomly hear something. A lot of what I have written in my life has either been through a book, a movie, or just reading something. Because, spoiler alert, I have no life. I sit and read all the time. I mean, I've got one book I'm reading individually for myself, and I've got two I'm using for my next manuscript right here. And you don't really want to know how many more I've read this month. So I will just look at things. And one of the things with Santos is that unless you hear about the Pele years in the 60s, you don't hear anything else. And the internet now, the last 3 or 4 years, has been easier for me to get in to some of that stuff because I only speak one language. I can make do in Spanish. Really, real hard when I was doing books in Portuguese, real fun. With the team, one of the things that I found, and I put this in my book, I know one of you has read it because I've seen it marked on my manuals, on my thing, is that Ronaldinho Neymar game about 10 years ago, the 5-4 game. And I had to throw that in there because it was kind of the going back and forth. And as much as I give Neymar a lot of trouble, I have other nicknames for him. And I like to see teams that are kind of factories for youth, factories for developing players. Because that's why I kind of poke you guys about, okay, who's next? Who's coming next? Who's the 20th? Who's under 20s and all that? Not only because I've been playing Football Manager since 2007, but I like to see what the games are and then go from there and try to nitpick and write something big about it. And to be honest, this past week with Substack was because you guys got relegated. That was completely it. I looked at it. I'm like, all right, Santos fans need something good to read. Let me pick some things that I can get at like the one I did on Monday. I didn't know there was that many people before Pele there. Now, obviously, Santos had been around since 1900s. There are other players. I mean, there's other players in Flamenco's history before Zico gets there. So I want to just, like, pick at some of the stuff. That's why, like, I have other manuscripts sitting around on South America.
Yeah, I mean, you said a ton there. And just quickly going back on a couple points. I mean, one, definitely enjoyed some of the content that was coming out on South American Football Chronicles, including about, you talk about a player that, you know, the one before Pele. Well, like you said, there was multiple ones before Pele, but, you know, kind of a mysterious, they're very mysterious, right? You know, you might see a scratchy photo, the club might post a tweet about them and they might got some weird name, right? But I love what you did with the story of Arakan, Patsuka. Wild stories like that you don't get anywhere else. Like if you want to go ahead and tell the story of really how we got a shot with the team, that would be awesome because it's just one of those stories that's like, it's so 1920s. It's so like, whatever, but this guy's, I mean, he's a legend. A lot of time has passed 100 yeah. years now, but he's a legend for Santos and we shouldn't forget his name if we're into the sport and Santos.
Which is funny. I found that on the Santos site.
Mm-hmm.
It was one of those things is for as bad as South America does for the English culture, if you can translate some of the stuff, you will just pick and find it. Well, what it was is Juan was born in the state of Sao Paulo. And he was nipping around and wanted to be a footballer, just point blank. So he went to one of the U15 games and sat in the stands. And I forgot the name of the they said football director. It probably was just a translation for manager.
Mm-hmm.
One of the players was sick, so the coach took him out of the stands, said, "Hey, we need you. Come on in." And he scored all five goals in a 5-5 game. And it was against another team that, like, a year later they got smoked by. And then he just kept moving up, but he was one of those players. Actually, the other fun thing was in that is there was kind of a revolt at the team and around that generation where and you see this a lot in the early games is because people would – a lot of the teams that you follow now came out of the mills and came out of the mining countries and all that. That's, I mean, I'd say it's Flamengo, Boca, Peñarol, got most of the black country in England are come out of that area. But – a lot of the players were not paid when they first started. I mean, they weren't really starting getting paid that much until 2000 at the most. So a bunch of players over one of the festive periods for Santos decided to play for their home team, for their mill team. Well, the manager had a problem with that and kicked them all out for 90 days. Arkin had nothing. Arkin was like, "You're not taking my team out from underneath me. I'm gone too." which as I was saying when I was talking to you about the relegation, the fans heard of all of this and rioted. And the suspensions were all kicked, and it was like six players were kicked down to like, I think it went from 90 to 60. I think it was initially 30. And then at that time, they just all washed out eventually. But Arkin's family all started playing with Santos towards the end too. So,
gotcha. Yeah, it's just crazy. And I love that you're telling those stories because they need to be told in English. But Stephen, you're wearing this shirt. Let's talk about the subject of one of your most recent book. Flamengo winning all the cups. First and foremost, got to get that ebook on US Amazon. Got to go to if you're in the US and you want the ebook, you got to go to the UK website to all the listeners and use a VPN. You can get a hard copy.
Spoiler alert, I love the hard copies more than anything else, and I've got four with me, so and you can get them in the U.S. now. It's been out since October.
Yeah. So I like an ebook, which is what I was looking for. And when I was looking at the shipping for a hardcover, I did, for whatever reason, it was really expensive because I think they're coming from the U.K. Right. So I had to use a little VPN magic on the ebook. But regardless, go buy the book. So what inspired you to write on that subject and, you know, talk a little bit maybe about your interest in Flamengo and how that came to be?
It was another person that showed up on the podcast, Marcelo, and I'm sure you guys know him. He's in New Jersey-ish. I used to be able to get guests on my pod. And when I was just stepping through South America, because Duffy's the easiest co-host I've ever had, and I've had seven of them. I could just literally say, "Hey, I want to talk about this. Here's what we're going to do." And he can talk on pretty easily. So I started talking to Marcelo on air about the 81 team. And I'm like, there's something to this. Because I had such a bad time with my publisher of the Boca book. I didn't want that to be the last view of one for me. And Boca book is good. It's a nice little filler book to get you started. It's 90 pages. The Flamenco book is 257. There's a lot more to it. And my, Pitch Publishing, my new publisher, really pushed me on this. I just felt that because the only stuff we had ever had out on that 81 team was through Tim Vickery and Jonathan Wilson, that there needed to be more. There just needed to be more. I didn't think I could get a full book out of it originally. My thought was I was going to fail at this, and then I was going to have to do a broader Brazil book. Because I wanted to do another club team, because I figured my original goal at that time was to just stay in South America and just keep hipping around all the countries down there. I didn't think I was going to be able to do another Argentinian one right off the bat, because there's a bunch of teams in Argentina that should have them. But Flamenco was the easiest, because there's a guy that lives in Rio that has a very long form Flamenco history one. I can't quite pronounce the end of it, but his writing is, once I ran it through a translator, was freaking amazing. I mean, he goes all the way back to the start of Flamenco back in like 1900s, and he writes like one article every 3 months, and it's like 4,000 words. So, I mean, I looked at this, I'm like, jackpot. I can do it. I'll set out each thing, and I'll go from there. And then I just started peeling back, because the good thing with Flamenco playing Liverpool in the 80s is that I could bring in the Simon Hugheses and the writers in Liverpool, because Liverpool's one of those clubs that every single second of that club has about 100 books on it. Not all of them are great, I'll be honest with you on that, but I was able to pull that in. I was also able to completely rip one of the prime ministers, which is going to be there's going to be a third book I'm going to do that on too, but that's just me.
Yeah, there's a chapter in
there. I was able to. Oh, yes. Oh, boy, have I got a lot of shit on that one. Oh, Lord. Ironically, the only people that have had problems with that are the Americans. I don't understand it. But anyway, I wanted to get something out about a Brazilian team that wasn't Pele, 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 Pele. I wanted people to know that they were other ones, other players out there. I mean, Zico, the white Pele, Socrates, Romero, Beto, all of those type of teams. And to be honest, through it, the Flamengo fans have been interesting. Most of them are the easiest people to deal with. They want it out there. There are some that don't live in Rio that have been not that fun to deal with. I'll put it nicely on that, but that's what social media is. And plus, I wanted to find out what it was before Zico. I also want to know what was Zico's. I wanted to know what Zico's story was before, because there's nothing on him. He doesn't do interviews. He will never write a book. I don't think he speaks English. And it's like a lot of them don't speak English. So I wanted to pick and choose on it. And some of the stories I dug up about him are quite funny too.
Yeah, that's cool, because Zico, one of the biggest names in Flamengo's history. I mean, it would have been nice of him if he Warrior to do more stuff to entertain people that follow him or that follow the club that he played for. But tell us a little bit of the history of Flamengo, and more specifically the 1981 season that you mentioned earlier, where they were crowned continental champions for the first time ever. And what was that like, coming from a fan like you, but also for the supporters in the Carioca state?
Well, that was one of the things. What people don't understand about that is that they had failed so many times before. I mean, Zico had gotten the stink on him of not being able to finish overall, not being able to get across the line. He had gone to some finals, he'd gone to some Brazilian cups, and just missed it. And I mean, I know Brazil gets the junkle with having a coach coming every 3 seconds in these teams. That was the case in 81. There were three there before they actually kicked on. That really made the team. That made Zico right there. I mean, you got to remember, that's right before the Spain 82 year. So they had all the talent coming there, and it was Zico's way to get him in there. The fun thing is, after they got the Copa Libertadores, they had to go play Liverpool. And nobody had seen this type, because at that time, because of 66, the Brits had a very poor opinion of South America. So it was one of those, they went all the way to Tokyo. And then they ran circles around this hard team. I mean, I can't imagine Nunes, Zico Jr. going up there and seeing Graham Sonos in the middle of the field. I mean, that is like walking. That's like going across the middle at in a game and getting clocked by a linebacker. I mean, Graham Sonos would do that pretty regularly. If he had any knees left, he'd probably still do it. I mean, I'm scared of Vinnie Jones, and I'm an inch taller than the man. But what it showed is it made that team a bunch of heroes. It got Zico the generational money of being able to move over to Italy. Because there were so many of those talented players that never really left the shores of South America that could have done it. I mean, you think about those Santos teams back in the day. I mean, Zito had the chance. Dida had the chance. Pele, I mean, we hear the stories. They all had the chance. I mean, Pele needed the money. But that made it easy for Zico to go over to Udinese. And that was a whole kerfuffle, to say the least, because AC Milan wanted him too. And they had to, and because they had the foreigners rule, they had to go to the government and change some rules to get Zico in there.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I mean, you could probably take a deep dive on a bunch of those facets that you were talking about, but yeah, you're completely right. Zico is a fantastic player, of course, but I love how you said it really cemented him as, you know, he is Mr. Flamengo. And even now, you know, when in 2019, you know, there's all the comparisons, humongous deal when Gabriel Barbosa broke one of Zico's records. You know, he is the gold standard still, even to this day. And it's really interesting that it was him that brought that first Libertadores to Flamengo. And building on that, 2019, obviously, Flamengo are back. Copa Libertadores, the dramatic win, Gabigol himself, if we're still calling him that, Gabriel Barbosa scoring the two late goals to beat River. And then it's like fate would have it. Flamengo meet Liverpool in the final of what's now called the Club World Cup, used to be called the Intercontinental Club or Cup. What were you thinking in that game If you were, you know, keeping up with it, were you thinking that maybe this was just destiny and Flamengo was here once again in the same spot they were all those years ago, with another talented goal scorer, and that they could stand toe to toe with Liverpool?
Oh no, they weren't going to have any shot. They weren't going to have any shit. Now you got to remember when this happens, the world is kind of starting to shut down because this is around the COVID stuff. So the world is starting to really shut down. And that was a weird month for Liverpool because they had all these fixtures coming at the same time because they were in all the cups. So Klopp had to leave half of his staff back there for the FA Cup. And he had to basically run out. I think he left a couple of his veterans back there and I think that was where Neil Ardley got them through. But anyway, there was no chance that Liverpool was going to lose another one to Flamengo. That would just, you're not going to do that. I mean, with the team that Liverpool put out there, I mean, realistically, what Flamengo has been, and it's kind of sad, is it's just a bunch of old guys. I mean, if you think what was there, I mean, Gabigol went to Europe and failed. And they had Jorge Jesus, who was over there as a coach, and he went back. They weren't going to keep up. I mean, that Liverpool team playing the gegenpress, it was going to be the Liverpool win, which was fine. It's just funny that it was, as I'm writing this book, they're playing again. I'm like, great. Well, there's another chapter. That's the second chapter, and almost could have pushed it off the next Copa Libertadores too, but that'll be if they keep going. But that's, I mean, they had all those cups in those 2 years. It was very similar to the 81, 82 years.
Yeah, I mean, going back to that match, Liverpool and Flamengo, and you talked about the coach of Flamengo, Jorge Jesus. It's unfortunate how after that final, everything just went downhill during COVID. I think news came out that he had COVID and was out of the squad for a long time until he moved to Benfica for some reason. So you could say that was a little unfortunate and maybe the beginning of the downfall of Flamengo. But going from one Libertadores finalist to another, Boca Juniors of 2023, you wrote a book about them as well. So I was interested to know why you picked Boca, and maybe you can tell us a little bit of the Argentine club history as you did for Santos and Flamengo.
Okay. The Boca one is interesting. My dad, when he was still alive, was an avid traveler. Up until he took about 10 years off of traveling after my mom died, to about 2013. And then he started traveling places he had never been. He had never been in South America as a non-employee. My dad worked at Bausch & Lomb in the 80s and 90s. They did all the contacts and were part of the Olympic teams at that time. So he had been everywhere. Well, my dad's family always, whenever they go on a trip, try to bring something back of those places. And my dad always would bring back a scarf. At that time, and I think I've told this one on air with you, Peter, but I had 300 soccer scarves at one point. So my dad was, oh, cool. I'll go get my son a scarf. Well, his last day in Buenos Aires, he's about to miss his plane. He gets on a bus and goes, I need La Bombonera right now. In broken whatever-ish, these trends. So he runs into the club shop. It's crazy wild-haired old man in his 70s runs and goes, my son is the foremost expert in history and sports, history and football in the United States. I need something that says Boca Juniors on it. And they basically threw him a scarf. I used to have it put up here. It's somewhere in my room. But anyway, off of that, I found that funny. So I'm like, oh, what the hell? I'll start picking around on that. And then I started listening to Gabriel Aguero. He does the Boca in English podcast every so often, and he's a great guy. It was the same thing. Santos, Boca Juniors, Penarol, Olimpia, Bolivia, nothing in English. I'm like, okay, I will write something out on this. And I was a much worse writer at that point in 2017. I forgot when I started that, but I'm a much more thorough writer at this point. And I was only trying to write kind of like a spark notes or kind of like a beginner's guide to Boca Juniors, kind of like touch on the stuff from the 40s, touch on the run of cups in the 70s, talk about Carlos Bonacci, and then get out of there. Because there was really nothing that was going to be coming up outside of the final that was moved to Madrid because, you know, money pays. And there's something else in Miami that I can't say on air. So I just wanted to get it out. And it hit number one on the first day. It was the highest selling book in Argentinian soccer in the United States for a week and a half that year. I never thought I could pull that one off. I pulled it off again with a flamenco book too, but that's flamenco's better. That and also they have their Zico in their vice president right now. Oh, Riquelme. Riquelme doesn't do interviews. He won't write a book. He's point blank won't do it. He's said it many times. I know he knows English because I've heard him talk, but there's just enough there that could do it. And also, as I'm finishing this, Daniel Williamson wrote his book, his Boca Juniors book. And I'm a huge, Daniel is my favorite editor I've ever had. One of the nicest guys in football media you will meet outside of, Phil Shane here in the States. I will never say, Phil Shane in Miami is the nicest guy. With the amount of people he's helped far outlives anything else. I did because more people need to know more about Riquelme, Tevez, Ratan, and some of the Copa Libertadores that we don't hear, because that's a fun tournament because you don't always have the huge teams winning it, and you can't really buy. You can't really buy a team to get into it, if that makes sense. I mean, I know Flamenco first one in 19. That was a heavily transferred in team. That wasn't homegrown-ish. I'm not trying to get too weird on that one, but just Boca was fun.
Got it. Yeah, and first and foremost, before we move on, yeah, you shouted out Sepe, Bolivar News. Gabriel Aguero also generously had me on his podcast when Santos were in the Copa Libertadores semifinals playing against Boca. And he's a great guy. And I know I noticed recently he's been more active on Twitter and with the podcast again. So Boca in English, go check that out as well. I think you name dropped someone else that I like and who I've interacted with, but I'm since forgotten it. But But yeah, like you said, Copa Libertadores is just so much fun. And that's one of the reasons I think that we're so attracted to South American football. The predicting, the unpredictable unpredictability, wow, is so much more fun than Europe. You've got all these teams, we could even just talk about this year. Olympia beating Flamengo, it was great. And you still get these two giants, Fluminense and Boca, in the final. You know, you can criticize the continental CONMEBOL all you want. Individual associations for sure, the refs, whatever. But it's just so much more fun than a lot of European football, and that's why we enjoy watching it, talking about it, and reliving it. All right, Steven. Thank you so much for joining. Before we let you go, you need to tell us, where can people find more of your content, whether it's podcasts, whether it's blogs, and whether it's books?
Basically, follow any retweet you've ever had from the Santos in English account that Peter runs, because he retweets everything. I'm online. I'm Steven C. Brandt on Twitter. Everything, I have my link tree up there. The pod is once a month, and until next summer, the only book you'll have to look at is the Flamenco book. I do South American Football Chronicles. That's on Substack if you guys want to get a hold of it. And I know Peter will link it in the show notes below here. He actually knows how to do that more than me, and I went to school for media. Go figure. Yeah, and I'll respond to anything as long as it's. I'll respond to anybody talking down the sport if I'm around, reading or watching something or updating something in like the 70s in England. Go figure.
All right, yeah. So there you go, guys. Go get the books, Boca and Flamengo. Listen to the pod and definitely check out South American Football Chronicles, because it's nice, it's concise, it's interesting, and it's a great jumping off point if you're like me and you're like, what? Who is this guy? I got to get on Wikipedia and find out more. Thank you so much, Stephen. Really appreciate it. Enric and I are signing off, but we will be back very soon with more guests and more content all on Brazilian football. So again, thank you so much for listening, especially if you made it this far. Really appreciate it, and have a great night.